Hello everyone. Welcome back to a book I love. We are today in Paris for the seventh episode of the podcast and find ourselves in this charming and rather-packed bookshop of the 7 Rue Jarret, well, after 8 books in Le 10e arrondissement. After 8 books is an independent bookshop and publisher. They have an online presence but also welcome thinkers, writers, musicians, and other art workers to present their work and discuss in the space we are. We have today with us two of the familiar voices of a book I love, Alicia Yeribekian, the Madame ETH, which is a small book kiosk at the architecture school in Zurich, to which After Eight Books contributed to make a selection of books, which you can also find on Women Writing Architecture. Helen Thomas and I representing Women Writing Architecture, and Carmen Fontamel, architect, independent, and writer based in Zurich, which was the book of the day. I'm very happy to have Carmen part of the discussion today. Carmen is an old friend. You, maybe differently than me, have always hated nerdy architecture dinners talk. So I always thought the format of a book I love would be very familiar to you. The idea of speaking about architecture from particular and specific observations taken from a book, things that at first glance don't really feel to necessarily be related to architecture, but which they are. So today we will speak about King Kong Theory, written by Virginie Despentes and published by Grasset in French in 2006. King Kong Theory is an autobiographical essay. It was rather well received by the readership and the critic, in contrast to Baisse-moi, Fuck Me, which was her first novel and judged too brutal, trash, too virile, out of limits. Virginie Despentes was bank at 13. She left the house. She was 17, freelancer, writing about rap. She was a hostess in peep shows, prostitute on the Minitel. King Kong Theory is a short and energetic text in which she describes a world of sex and prostitution, a world of men and profit, in which the role of woman is to entertain and fulfill men's pleasure. So, Carmen, maybe you want to start telling us why you chose the book, and maybe you also want to start reading a small passage.
I love the first pages of books, not because I don't like reading the rest, but because I don't actually read the backs. So it becomes like the sales pitch of a book. Reading the first lines is what gets me carried into it. And I think I stumbled across Bad Lieutenants, the first chapter of this novel, as I was maybe doom scrolling or doom googling after reading Paul Preciado's Testo Junkie. And there's something about the format and the diction which is quite enticing, I find. That's why I think it's nice to kind of start with actually the introduction in King Kong Theory. I'll read it in French. J'écris de chez les moches, pour les moches, les vieilles, les camionneuses, les frigides, les mal baisées, les imbaisables, les hystériques, les tarées, toutes les exclues du grand marché à la bonne mort. Et je commence par là pour que les choses soient claires. Je ne m'excuse de rien. Je ne viens pas me plaindre. Je n'échangerai ma place contre aucune autre, parce qu'être Virginie Despentes me semble être une affaire plus intéressante à mener que n'importe quelle autre affaire. Je trouve ça formidable qu'il y ait aussi des femmes qui aiment séduire, qui sachent séduire, d'autres se faire épouser, qui sentent le sexe et d'autres le goûter des enfants qui sortent de l'école. Formidable qu'il y en ait de très douces, d'autres épanouies dans leur féminité, qu'il y en ait de jeunes, très belles, d'autres coquettes et rayonnantes. Franchement, je suis bien contente pour toutes celles à qui les choses telles qu'elles sont conviennent. C'est dit sans la moindre ironie. Il se trouve simplement que je ne fais pas partie de celles-là. Bien sûr que je n'écrirais pas ce que j'écris si j'étais belle, belle à changer l'attitude de tous les hommes que je croise. C'est en tant que prolote de la féminité que je parlais hier et que je recommence aujourd'hui. Quand j'étais au RMI, je ne ressentais aucune honte d'être exclue, juste la colère. C'est la même en tant que femme. Je ne ressens pas la moindre honte de ne pas être une super bonne meuf. En revanche, je suis verte de rage qu'en tant que fille qui intéresse peu les hommes, on cherche sans cesse à me faire savoir que je ne devrais même pas être là. On a toujours existé. Même s'il n'était pas question de nous dans les romans d'hommes, on imagine que des femmes avec qui il voudrait coucher. On a toujours existé, on n'a jamais parlé. Même aujourd'hui que les femmes publient beaucoup de romans, on rencontre rarement de personnages féminins, au physique ingrat ou médiocre, inaptes à aimer les hommes ou s'en faire aimer. Au contraire, les héroïnes contemporaines aiment les hommes, les rencontrent facilement, couchent avec eux en deux chapitres, elles jouissent en quatre lignes, elles aiment tout le sexe. La figure de la loseuse de la féminité n'est plus que sympathique, c'est essentiel. Exactement comme la figure du loser social, économique ou politique. Je préfère ceux qui n'y arrivent pas pour la bonne et simple raison que je n'y arrive pas très bien moi-même et que dans l'ensemble, l'humour et l'inventivité se situent plutôt de notre côté. Quand on n'a pas ce qu'il faut pour se la péter, on est souvent plus créatif. Je suis plutôt King Kong que Kate Moss comme fille. I think the way this reads, I'm captured by the format, by the way that it rolls off the tongue very quickly and the pace is very quick. We consume the words. It feels like we're consuming these women, the different descriptions of women that she's coming across. And it has a very vernacular tone, which mixed at times later on with profanity or with French slang, which makes the text read more like a manifesto or like a slam poem than perhaps an essay. And I enjoy the way that allows you to consume her text so easily. The way that she ping-pongs between one thought and the next without ever lingering too long on a thought brings me back for some strange reason to Thomas Bernhard and Guillen by always linking one sentence to the next, opting instead for repetition in order to come across, to bring something across, where it feels like we're staying on quite a superficial level. She never scratches really deeply into topics such as rape and prostitution or sex and gender, but to use a such precise term that so much exists between the lines. Maybe to give an example of this use of words, it's later on in the text, I made a note, she said, de ne pas être douée à être jolie, not be talented at being pretty, which is something I would never associate. How I think of being talented at doing something, not at being aesthetically pleasing. And in the same way, when she speaks of men, she used the description, I believe, un homme qui savait mourir à la guerre. When she speaks of the ideal of a man, the social construct of what we imagine men should be like, the idea that somebody would know how to be at war, that word choice is so precise that it leaves these very strong impressions of the people that she's describing.
I think it's interesting, this first lecture, there was something really almost mainstream about the way she writes, as if it was written sur le vif, as if it was written in one strain, like in one line. But what you're reading is there is a construction behind, or it's really so
Very precise, yeah, despite that it reads maybe more like a bar rant after somebody's had a few too many drinks and is just a little has lost some inhibitions and is speaking extremely openly about perhaps something that society might not allow them to say so easily. And in that sense, I feel like it links itself to pop culture in many ways. There is an element of Kill Bill and Bloody Vengeance or poetry slam or a rap song. There's this cadence to it, which carries you along, which is why I feel that sometimes they're not there is a stream of consciousness, but it moves so fast. She speaks of rape in about one line. It's the thoughts around that really construct the delicateness around her manifesto or text or of these short stories.
It's what I realized afterwards, this mix between a punk attitude and a more intellectual construction of the text. Maybe Helen, you want to, did you have the same impression or?
Well, I mean, I read it in English, and I think there's a different rhythm in English. I think the translation is probably really good. I mean, it reads fantastically, doesn't it, Alicia? But I mean, I'm like when Come and Speak, two ideas were going through my head. One was this issue of the surface, and you know, being talented at being pretty, and you know, you wonder is she. Because I don't completely buy her beginning, I have to say. I don't think that she necessarily constructs herself in this as a person in this outside a position that she says she's writing for, first of all. But this idea of having a tan to being pretty, is it to do with image? And she is seems to be obsessed with image. She's always talking about what things look like. And actually in an extremely conventional way, what is pretty is very conventional. And I find that strange because to me, many, many things are pretty and they're not. And actually, I find the conventional ideas of prettiness very unpretty. I mean, she was writing before Instagram, but this whole idea of how you manipulate your image in order to be pretty is to me an absolute ugliness. But that's maybe very personal. But then there's all, so is it image? Is it behavior? So this idea of behaving in a pretty way, which she also is inherently what she's saying. And then, you know, I think it's really powerfully dealt with throughout the... So there's image, behaviour and motivation. And I think motivation is what she's really speaking to. So that was the first thing. And then Carmen was speaking about context, talking about poetry slams and like the very direct voice and the rhythm of it. And, you know, I think that's really interesting. So, you know, I've been thinking about whether writing can be activism lately. And I always think it has to, you know, it can't in itself be activism. It has to be performed socially. And I think, so when you say it has the rhythm of a poetry slam, it's all, you're already enacting it. So, you know, there's an interesting tension there between the reading, when you're reading the book, you feel confronted by her. She's asking you these questions and then you kind of think, well, why am I going to answer you? But then you think, well, I'm just reading a book. I don't have to do anything. But there is this, you know, confrontation about yourself thing. So that immediately socializes it because you feel you're having this conversation and a dialogue element to it. So I think that's interesting. So I don't know what you think, Elise, because I noticed you were nodding at some point.
Yes, I've had quite similar feelings. For me, what was really interesting is that I felt understood but attacked at the same time, in between, because she does this thing where she put a married woman and a sex worker in like a comparison, and there's nothing kind of in between. There are these two extremes, and you're standing in the middle reading the book, and then you're like trying to, okay, this is me, but oh, this is also me, and she's criticizing this, you know. And I was always like feeling very understood by a friend that is like super, I don't know, understanding, but at the same time is not afraid to tell you that what you're doing might needs to be reconsidered, or you should like look at it from a different point of view. So this was really interesting because in the first lines it was like, oh, okay, this is like a book where I will be understood as a woman, you know, she's like writing for me, and then blah, blah, blah. And then later in the book, there were parts where I'm like, oh, okay, but I'm doing like the conventional things that women do, even though I come from a generation that is really trying not to do the things that women were doing for a very long time. So I felt this was quite interesting to be like in between. And then I was a little bit angry actually that she does this comparison and that this is so extreme, even though I know she's like a punk girl and everything has to be kind of extreme when you talk about it. But then I felt like when the King Kong scene comes into play, you just realize, so okay, but she's like this King Kong just like trying to be loud and trying to say something, and she's not trying to push this rivalry between a married woman and a sex worker, but she's just like trying to get something out of her. She's like wanting to be this loud King Kong. And then I was like, okay,
I mean, the King Kong story is a beautiful interlude. But I mean, what you're saying, you know, is the rest of the, I wouldn't call it an essay by any means. You know, it's very repetitive. Because that makes it also like more like a poem, more like a. But is it a frame for the interlude? Because that is completely different. It has a positive message. It's suggesting something instead of negate. I mean, yeah, I like you. I find this categorization of what women are, you know, in a way it's interesting, but also it's kind of really shuts it down. And I know she's being compared to Annie Ernaux, who just won the Nobel Prize for Literature, who also writes as a memoirist and also writes about her being as a sexual being. But it's, there's somehow, there isn't the confrontation, there isn't the categorization that you talked about, Alicia. And I was really pondering about that. Why are they so different? I mean, one's about the inner life and she's talking about the surface, Virginie.
Yeah, there is something in what you both said. she embraced somehow this, just to give some context, the first part of the book is mostly about her rape story, and then we go to her experience as a prostitute, and then she speaks about pornography, and it feels like in the way she is, she goes to the extreme, as Alicia was saying, she goes straight to the problem she understood. She's using herself as a cobaye to experiment and to go to places that triggers her curiosity and putting her at risk in different situations she's describing. She speaks about her experience as a prostitute. She really enjoyed it, or she says the positive part of it. I link that a lot to a punk attitude, this idea of looking at things in their struggles or the way they are or in their violence, because this is what she embraced. How she's answering to this rape situation is by, she's really violent in the book. She's really angry. You feel that. So she's embracing the same problem she's pointing at, the violence of men. And so I think this, to look at things that, how they are, and to find what is positive about them, and together with what I think you were saying, Helen, the celebration of somehow a heroine or the character she's depicting, the other prostitute she's meeting, she's celebrating the fact that they are product consumption.
I thought it came into my mind as you're speaking, because you know, about this, the Frenchness of it, which like, you've already acknowledged, but I'm just thinking, like, what does being a French punk mean? And I'm just going to say mm-hmm. this as an English person, you know, because I think yeah. English punk is very different, but
yeah.
French are obsessed with institutions.
Yeah.
I mean, you were telling us yesterday, Emily, about the work being done on institutional yeah. buildings for the Olympics. So that there is this, like, attack on institutions, and maybe that's where the categorizing comes from.
Yeah.
Because they're the institutions of marriage or institutions of prostitution. Prostitution is yeah. also mm-hmm. sexual institutions that she's attacking. So I just wonder if that's part of it. This, you know, that's what being a French punk means.
I feel it's like quite close to what the Swiss punk is.
Because yeah.
in Switzerland, it's always also against institutions all the time.
And the image that came into my head was a film by Derek Jarman, and I can't remember which one it is. It's an early one. And he's in the Docklands in the 80s, early 80s, the character is. And he has postmodern sprayed on a wall. And postmodern absolutely doesn't mean what postmodern means, you know, what we as architects think postmodern means, like a use of history in a kind of bricolage type way. It means after the modernist state, but you know, somehow it's very different to the French punk. So I just wondered what you thought about this idea of institutions and attacking them. That
I mean, for me, I'm not French at all, so it's not actually my culture. But I feel like the importance of going between these extremes. You were speaking of the kind of the dichotomy between the married wife and the whore, is this polarization is what allows, I feel like she's really pushing the edges of the boxes to find the middle ground again. I'm sorry, I'm just going to backtrack a little bit, but I understand when we might say, oh, I don't recognize myself inside one or the other. There is no complete separation of the two. I feel like that's what's always sitting between in this, because she writes about it as, well, you either have the maternal and the nourishing, or the maternal nourishing woman, or you have this subservient woman, or the whore, let's say, the liberated whore. That's not where I would recognize femininity, or where I think it's easy to find oneself. But I think by breaking the box of each, let's say, institution, or trying to define it, we see lots of middle ground. In the same way that she starts describing men who don't want to be virile, who don't want to go into a boxing match, or don't care about protecting all the people around them, or making money for, you know, going off to war and dying, for example.
For me, there is something interesting as an attitude that I could even use as a methodology or as a a way of reading, even as an architect, looking at things and even looking at a building. I think there is something in, also in the way she writes, that it's not about beauty, and to accept the ugliness. And then the reaction to that in the book, it's really declarative. And I don't know. I think it would be interesting to transform that into a project, but I don't know. I don't have an answer to the institution point.
Well, I think one of the institutions she doesn't engage with, which she is extremely qualified to engage with, mm-hmm. is the issue of class, you know, which for English punk is about class. And I think maybe in France, it's, you know, there's obviously, there's still an aristocracy in Britain. So the issue of class is totally bound up in the idea of anti-capitalism. Well, there are spectrums, class spectrums about the relationship to anti-capitalism. So I think she's so qualified to do that. And, you know, I mean, she talks about Cathy Aken. I was sure that she mentioned her in the book, but I couldn't find it. I looked through it 100 times. But, she cites Cathy Aken as a starting point. And I don't know, I remember, because I'm quite old, in the 80s, we used to kind of laugh at Cathy Aken and as a punk. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we laughed, and it's cruel, and I don't know, we were young, but she comes from a rich background, this punk, you can't, but it's like, public school boys have been, starting rock bands, like, what are they actually, that is really a British attitude of deep suspicion of people from the aristocracy or from wealth having a punk attitude. So I think that's different. She doesn't come, I mean, she comes from a working class background, mm-hmm. but that isn't, and it's inherent, it's implicit, but it's not an explicit message. And I find mm-hmm. that quite interesting. So rather than Cathy Aken, who says fuck or something, that's what influences her in a piece of writing, I never knew that could happen. I would say for an English person, the analogy is more Jeanette Winterson.
But this class, how does it manifest in the book? She goes to the dark places. She's from there, from those dark places. Mm-hmm. But then the readership is the bobo like us.
I mean, she talks about like class and all the problems that she's talking about. She always relates it to classism. Or she says like, if you're like in the USA and you get raped, when are you talking about those cases? When rich men try to protect their little girls, and she talks about it, she touches the surface mm-hmm. of it, but I would have wished to have a little bit more of her kind of point of view also as a writer. I mean, she comes from a working class, mm-hmm. but then how was she able to kind of crawl out of this as a person reading a lot also? I mean, mm-hmm. she's quite well read. I would have wished to have known something about her way of getting and books and writing and like cruel right kind of crawls out of just being sitting there in this working class. Because for me, I come from a family that also, I did never read books at home. Like don't come from a very academic family. And I always wondered like how people know about all these books and read about all this politics and all that stuff. So I think she could have maybe explain a little bit more how she is trying also to maybe bring all those class problems together as she does it with the wife and the whore, She could have also done it with bourgeoisie.
I think it's because she is an observer of the surface of things, isn't she? Like I don't know, my generation, it was Douglas Copeland. And she's a brilliant observer of the surface, but that makes it very difficult to have undercurrents of other things going on. Which is what I guess the difference with Annie Arnaux is. Her writing is very, as Carmen said at the beginning, there are no gaps in it. It's very dense. I mean, the writing and the thinking when you're reading it is just like you're almost like in a defensive dialogue. Whereas with Annie Arnaux, there are many, many gaps underwater places that you can be in at the set. And I think for me, that's a big difference.
Another point of the book is there is something clearly about the opposition of sex in the old book, not defining her like feminine sexuality through the one of men. And I was wondering about the figure of King Kong. You don't know if it's a male or female. It's at the limits between human and animal and adult and child and bad and good. And so there is this strong opposition. Then she calls her essay King Kong Theory. And you mentioned it at the beginning, Carmen, in the book of Testo Junkie. That was also part of a Book I Love session. One of the points we discovered during the discussion was that sexuality is a total construction of society. Paul Preciado is taking hormones to change sex, so it's purely artificial. But it was kind of an eye-opener in the book of Testo Junkie to understand sexuality behind gender. I was wondering what you thought in the context of the book of Virginie Despentes and what for you was the figure of the King Kong.
I mean, the first reference to it is exactly where I ended the text, where, you know, I'm more King Kong than Kate Moss. It's this moment where it's a very strong line, and you wait until much later on in this short book where you really get to the King Kong interlude, as Helen said. Then we really find out what she defines as King Kong. And as you said, this non-binary beast, it's a moment of really beauty and the beast. I think it's, for me, it was again this polarization between a very heteronormative society with binary polars.
Is it something that particularly make you think as an architect?
I mean, maybe in a silly fashion, it makes me think of what is male public space? Where are the polarizations of this? I think even at some point, she makes reference to the fact that feminism has failed to occupy public space and sort of asks quite in her top fashion, where the IKEA of kindergarten, for example, when I think of what would actually, just to entertain the thought, what if Prime Power in Zurich was actually a gigantic kindergarten and not associated with a man in a suit going to work? I mean, why not? Just to entertain the thought.
You have some thought, Alicia, about it? Or?
Yeah, I feel like in the end, it's just like I see her screaming up on this building as King Kong. I feel like it's a reflection of her thought, her ways to try to get through the world. Just opening the question of maybe what figure you know of is maybe your mirror, like your reflection in the mirror, like where do you see yourself and
well, I think it's like a science fiction interlude. I mean, story to me. Yeah. I mean, that's why she fits into a genre of women writers. Like, I mean, you know, it's a bit like Herland's, the Charlotte Perkins Gilman story of like she's imagining this fantasy world of where gender, which in a way maybe she's kind of living with Beatrix Paul Preciado, this world of non-gender and non-violence. So, and you know, she's interesting because, I mean, she is, as I was saying earlier, she's an incredibly powerful person with an intense will to live, you sense, finding life. And so, you know, I find that she's a very compelling person that you could encounter in the book. Really, really interesting. But I think to me, that's her most natural place, this kind of like within the genre of science fiction, women writers. Because, you know, like the book, despite its like poetry slam type density, it also tries to set out an intellectual framework for itself with you know, references to Virginia Woolf, and you mentioned stream of consciousness earlier. Mm-hmm. So, oh my God, this is quite a long way from Mrs. Dalloway. Yeah. So, but she also, you know, she quotes Simone de Beauvoir. She puts herself within a different context, which is. Feels uncomfortable. And you know, I mean, you're talking about her being you know, she's an autodidact, and she didn't you know, but what she learned herself, and you feel a sense of discomfort in that,
and as if she would like, she's trying to reach this point, but as she's like alone in this, like she's like King Kong, she's alone and trying to and trying to.
But that's I find that really compelling. I like it for but you know, but then you kind of have a feeling of sorrow. It's like, what, you know, in a way she's, I don't know what her intentions are, but, and I wouldn't dream of guessing what they were, but yeah. I'm sure there are many other layers underneath her provocations.
Yeah. Is there anything, Kevin, you want to add, or a last thought you had about the book, or something you want to say?
I think it's very nice to hear what other people think about it. To also know that it can sit quite uncomfortably. I did. I have to maybe get back to the sort of the Virginia Woolf being placed in between. That was actually from those moments where it seemed were very uncomfortable for me, less so than the text, simply because it didn't feel like it was at home inside there. As I said, sort of at the beginning, what I do, for me, it remains an interesting read in, though I don't recognize myself in her definitions of femininity, I appreciate the polarization that she does construct to find, see all the levels of gray in between, even though she it feels like she's really breathing in a sort of blasé fashion through all these quite weighty topics. It's a very democratic text that's very easily read, that is kind of refreshingly angry, never scratches too deep. It hurts, but it doesn't. For me, it really is like a witty bar rant that is setting up. It reads really like pop culture, even though, and that's maybe what I find so strange about it. It's the elements of pop culture coming back, the way that it reads, and the words are so easily consumed, and yet it's still coming from a very punk background. And there I'm finding its contradictions in itself.
If there is no other words, we can conclude. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much for having me.